Good morning. I guess as an introduction, I'll let you know where Woodward, Oklahoma is, where this research is being done. It's in northwestern Oklahoma, which is about the as far west as you'll find gamma grass natively. it's a good environment for plant breeding. We get extreme hot, cold, hail, wind, biggest hail I've ever seen. So a little bit about eastern gamma grass. It's a native, the reason why we're working with it, it's a native warm season grass. It was originally all over the place, but the buffalo grazed it out because it was so palatable. It's very high yielding. It can grow up to 2 inches a day in the proper conditions. It has high forage quality. It can withstand soggy soils. It has a really deep root that also enables it to have some drought tolerance, prevent soil erosion. It's great for wildlife, and now it's potentially a biofuels crop, especially because it's a perennial C4 grass. One of the drawbacks, or some of the drawbacks, are low seed production, seed shattering, establishment difficulties, and just as the buffalo proved, you can't overgraze it or you'll lose your stand. Low seed production is partly attributed to the nature of the inflorescence. This top part of the inflorescence, the top two-thirds, are all anthers that shed pollen, and the very bottom one-third is where the seed is produced, so you can see it doesn't produce very much seed in that situation. I'd like to acknowledge the late Chet DeWalt. He started the breeding program in the 70s at Woodward. He acquired a lot of material. He identified germplasm. He exploited the GSF trait, which I'll get into in a minute. So basically, I started the program, or continued it, in 2004 with this triploid breeding approach as one of many possible breeding approaches with gamma grass. There's more than one way to improve gamma grass through breeding than the one I'm speaking about. But so basically, we're looking for increased seed yield, more forage, persistence, and when bio, or basically the persistence and seed yield. So just some key concepts to hopefully make this presentation comprehensible. I mentioned the wild type is mostly anthers and then some female portion. There's a mutation that converts the whole inflorescence into a female structure, which enables an order of magnitude more seed to be produced. And it's controlled in a classical recessive inheritance. So you can cross two carriers and basically recover the GSF trait in different genetic backgrounds. So to express the trait, you have to have two recessive alleles. And the mutation is caused by a DNA deletion, so I was able to develop PCR-specific primers that will detect either the dominant or the recessive allele. Gamma grass can exist in the diploid state, which is sexual. It reproduces sexually. Triploids, which have 54 chromosomes, if they're fertile, they're going to be reproducing most likely by apomixis. And tetraploids, which have 72 chromosomes, and they do reproduce by apomixis. And if you don't know what apomixis is, basically it's when the maternal plant reproduces itself through seed clonally, so all the seed produced from that plant is genetically identical to the mother plant, which makes for basically a hybrid that breeds true, which is one of the reasons why I'm interested in the triploid breeding method, to capture apomixis in the hybrid so it breeds true. So ideally, if you have a great hybrid, all its seed are going to be great hybrids also. You still do need pollen to trigger seed production, so which is a form of apomixis called pseudogamous. So in 2004, I went through some of the existing germplasm at the station and selected a handful of candidates for crossing. Basically, this is their genotype for the GSF locus. Most of them are homozygous dominant, which means they don't express it and they don't carry it. These are two original collections, one from Bob Dayton in Manhattan, Kansas, another one in Kansas. That's where they found the original GSF mutation. These in black are ones that Chet thought had some potential seed producing or shatter resistant properties. And It's this number 1793, which is a key player. That was selected by Chet, and it's a carrier of the GSF allele. It's also a very vigorous plant. It sheds a lot of pollen, and it has great combining ability, so it's a good plant to cross with. And that's basically, I selected carriers after crossing with 1793. So I crossed 1793 with these, and then selected out carriers to then cross to produce new GSF plants, which basically, these would be all the crosses with 1793. There were 24 families, and I selected 154 hybrids out of that. So for example, this 1793 by 1654, 12 of those plants I selected based on a DNA screening technique that told me which ones were carriers, which basically you take a little piece of the plant, you run the PCR, and for example here, row 15, plant 16, that band indicates it's carrying the recessive mutation or the recessive allele. And that really helped speed things up, because otherwise you normally would have to do a test cross to determine which of your plants are carriers, and that adds an extra year or cycle, maybe 2 years, because gamma grass doesn't always flower the first year. So it's a good example of using a molecular approach to select germplasm before it flowered, which was what was done in this case. Up here is the year, or kind of the timeline of what's going on. So I moved the carriers into the greenhouse and then intercrossed those. So this would be the female parent, which was and the male parent. Both the parents, since they were carriers, they both involved 1793. And once you cross two carriers, like I showed in that first slide, you then segregate for new GSF plants. So I selected 41 GSF plants out of the field in 2007 and 2008 based on the actual inflorescence, how prolific it looked, how many inflorescence the plant itself actually produced, because that'll help for crossing in the greenhouse. You want it to produce a lot of inflorescence, and then also forage type qualities, how vigorous the plant was and how it looked in its second year. So to make the triploid, to create the triploid, basically you cross a diploid, which is the 2X, and in this case all our diploids are the GSF female plants, with a tetraploid, which is carrying the apomictic trait, and you use those as the pollen donors. So 2X cross with 4X, you get 3X, and if you have the chromosomes, you hopefully get a hybrid that a triploid would have the 54, half from the diploid and half from the tetraploid. And the GSF trait helps tremendously because it enables you to create a lot of hybrid seed in the cross. If you're using the wild type, you don't get very many seed per cross. And it's a numbers game to ultimately recover a triploid hybrid that produces pollen and reproduces by apomixis. Chet had claimed about 5 to 10% of the female fertile plants, 5 to 10% of the triploids that are fertile. You get about 5 to 10% that are fertile, and that's female fertile. If that doesn't mean it's also shedding pollen that will trigger the apomixis, so it may even be lower than that. But basically, we bring the plants in from the field. These are all the GSF plants. We made 5 copies of each, and we used 9 tetraploid donors. The ones with the WW are Woodward accessions that have persisted in our germplasm nurseries for a long time. Bumpers and Highlander and San Marcos are released varieties. And the PI I acquired off the GRIN system. So based on those crossings in 2009, we produced approximately 19,000 seed using the 41 GSF parents and 9 tetraploid pollen donors. About 3,000 were germinated and planted, and we stored the rest for future evaluation just because it's labor intensive, and we just sort of picked the ones that, well, anyway, so approximately 1,000 hybrids were put in the field, and then I was kind of trying to push the breeding system along, so we took them out of the field after they went dormant, but they didn't really grow that much that first year. My goal was to trigger them to flower, because they didn't flower that first year once they germinated and were out in the field. And we tried to induce them to flower, which normally when you bring in a dormant gamma grass plant and put it in warm conditions in the greenhouse, it'll grow, the dormancy will be removed, and then it'll actually flower. So our goal there was to check the plants that were flowering to see if they produced fertile pollen and seed ultimately. And we started screening the ones, originally I started screening them all for chromosomes, but that you by root squashes you can count and confirm that they have the 54 chromosomes, but that's pretty labor intensive, so ultimately I'm just chromosome counting the ones that produce seed. In general, this is still early on, and the majority of the plants are still in the process of being screened to see if they produce seed. I hope to select a diverse number of triploid hybrids, and then once we have seed, then further test them for agronomic traits, how vigorous they are, how persistent they are. Possibly test blends if we have multiple fertile triploids. It might be possible to blend them and create a variety that has multiple apomix in it. Increase the seed. I mentioned that we stored the rest of that seed. We're in the process of pre-treating about 5,000 more seed based on some preliminary evidence from the field evaluation. For example, crosses with San Marcos have been eliminated because San Marcos doesn't persist in woodward, so I figured that's a way to screen out some of the seed, even though we're keeping it. Same with that PI I got off the Grin system. That didn't persist in woodwork. Ultimately, I'd like to, if I find the ideal plants, release it as a public germplasm in Grin, or possibly select some of those hybrids for forage, bioenergy, possible ornamental. Since it's an apomic, it'll be completely uniform, and that can work in an ornamental situation, or possible other end uses. In terms of just plant breeding summary statistics, so far there's 6 years spent on this project. There's been 3 space plant nurseries, the original F1 hybrids in 2005, the segregating GSF families in 2006, and the 2009 potential 3X hybrids. There were 4 greenhouse crossing rounds, the original crosses to produce the F1 seed. Then the next year, the intercrossing, the F1 carriers, and then making the 2X by 4X crosses to produce the triploids. And then just recently, I wouldn't really call it a crossing round, but we tried to self-pollinate the plants we brought in to confirm that they were producing seed. Currently, we've recovered a limited number of triploid hybrids based on chromosome counting and seed production, less than 30, and some of those were left in the greenhouse open pollinated, so it's possible. We haven't confirmed that these less than 30 plants are pollen fertile, because you can produce apomictic seed with pollen from another individual, so we still need to confirm that even this group of 30 have pollen that actually triggers apomixis in that plant. And with that, that's all I have. Thank you.
We have time for questions for Dr. Gottman, a couple of questions.
Yes.
I mean, are farmers growing gamma grass? Or is it still in the experimental stage?
I wouldn't call it a popular crop, but yeah, you can buy seed. There's commercial varieties out there. In northwest Oklahoma, there's people have it. I wouldn't call it it's a minor crop. There's the establishment difficulties make it risky, and the seed's expensive, and you can't overgraze it, which are all things that kind of make ranchers not so excited. But then again, if you see the yields and the vigor and the fact that it's a perennial, there's kind of renewed interest in it.
Mm-hmm. What about the material from Arizona? Have you tested that? There's a gamma grass that grows in Mount. Huachuca, I think, or Camp Huachuca.
I'm not aware of that one.